Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your homeschool companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome to Homeschool Companion. I'm here with Dr. Mary Mann Simon, and I'm just enjoying looking at your latest book. And it, if I could describe it for the listeners, it is sparkly, it has animals, and it's most importantly has a great message. It's talking about the birth of Jesus.
Right. And this is really a fun book because I've just seen the finished copy just a couple hours ago. But as you mentioned, it's glittery, it's sparkly, and the sparkles will not come off in your fingers. I can guarantee that.
Yes, I tried that when I was playing right. with it. I'm going, how do they get that to...
As any child would.
Yes. I'm sure right. they'll rub it. It has texture, and it looks three-dimensional the way they've, you know, each animal as they're coming to the manger scene.
Die cut is so
yes,
fun.
Yes.
We've had similar, we've used similar formats for Easter, for Thanksgiving, for birthday. So it just follows in the same kind of a series that we've had with Standard Publishing that has done really, really well.
Yes.
So I'm excited that we have a Christmas book.
Well, tell me a little bit about the beginnings and what has led you up to this point in your life.
Wow. Well, first, I need to tell you, I'm probably one of the few people you'll talk to who didn't want to be an author. I told God I was too busy. And I knew that writing after doing a doctoral dissertation, as you know, was no fun.
That's right.
And it was a lot of work. And so I didn't want anything to do with writing. But what happened was I had three children in 3 years, and we needed action-oriented devotions for our children. We had tried to use devotional books, and they just didn't work. And so what I did was, as our children were going throughout the day, I would jot down how I saw God at work in their lives in very real ways.
Oh, that's so fantastic.
And then I wrote that on McDonald's napkins and spelling mm-hmm. lists and all that kind of stuff. And then I put that into a book that got on the Christian bestseller list. And that was... My books have sold a total of more than 3 million copies.
Now, what was that first book? What was the title of the first
that
book?
That was Little Visits with Jesus.
Little Visits with Jesus.
And that was, it'll be 25 years next year. But just think, God did all that in 3 million books are out there somewhere.
Yes.
They're in 10 languages, my books. And God was able to work through me. And I told him I was too busy.
Yes.
So I'm really a great testimony to what God can do through anybody. I mean, if he can work through me, I was unwilling, I was not eager, I was not a willing disciple in writing. And yet, look at what he's done. It's really an amazing story.
You know, I kind of get the goosebumps when I think about how God does take us wherever we're at, even when we're not willing, and he can work mighty. There's children out there who probably don't even know that that's in the fiber of their spirituality, is the little lessons that they learn through the books that you've written.
Well, and it's not just children. What's so exciting to me is that as a children's author, I have an intergenerational platform. I mean, it's grandparents, it's aunts, it's uncles who are sharing with children. Today, we have a whole generation of parents without a Christian history. And where are those children going to learn about Jesus? Where are they going to hear the message of salvation? It's through the second voices in yes. these kids' lives. And it's all those people who might buy a gift as a godmother or mm-hmm. a godfather for that child. And what a wonderful sharing that they do, not just of a book, but of life lessons.
Yes. We're talking about specifically your latest book, My March to the Manger.
Yeah.
I wondered if we could get you to read this book to us.
Oh, I'd love to.
We're a multi-generational audience, and I thought, wouldn't that be neat if you would just read it to us?
Oh, that would be so fun. And this, I should tell you, really talks about a tradition that we had in our family. Being an early childhood educator, as you know, I wanted our children to be physically interactive and not just mentally, but also physically doing things to get ready for Christmas that would be Christ-focused. Mm-hmm. And so what we did was we marched the figures of our manger set through the house in the weeks before Christmas. And our countdown to Christmas went through on our windowsills. So we take the cow in the living room and the donkey in the bedroom, and they would march from windowsill to windowsill through the weeks before Christmas. And by Christmas Eve, everything was filled in the manger except waiting for the baby Jesus. And we found that was a great way to, on a daily basis, you know, where's the cow moving today? To refocus mm-hmm. our children's attention on that manger scene. With all the commercialism that was going around in December, we could help refocus, and they would be physically interacting with these mm-hmm. figures. Plus, it's an intergenerational activity, because after having 3 kids in 3 years, I needed really active-oriented kinds of stuff that even young children could participate in. So it worked great. So this is really a tradition that I'm sharing from our family to all those of your listeners. And it's my march to the manger. Let's start the big countdown now. Ready, set, go. For soon it will be Jesus' birthday, you know. 6 days before Christmas. Now what shall we do? Let's welcome the cow who bends low to say moo. How long before Christmas? I hardly can wait. Let's look at the calendar. Count to the date. 5 days before Christmas, a kitty so small creeps softly meowing into the cow's stall. The tree is so pretty with lights all aglow, but that's not what matters this season, you know. 4 days before Christmas, let's welcome a sheep who settles right down and soon falls fast asleep. The reason for Christmas is a baby's birth, when Jesus came here to be born on this earth. 3 days before Christmas, a bird from the sky flies in high above where the baby will lie. We'll march to the stable where there is fresh hay, a soft bed for Jesus, who's born Christmas Day. 2 days before Christmas, who scurries so fast? A tiny pink mouse squeaking, I won't be last. Bring animals with you. Together we'll cheer. The birth of our baby, our Savior, is near. 1 day before Christmas, a donkey so gray comes marching in slowly before Christmas Day. The stable is full now. It's filled up with love to welcome God's Son, Jesus, sent from above. And the verses from Luke 2. She gave birth to her firstborn son. She dressed him in baby clothes and laid him on a bed of hay.
Amen.
March to the manger. But can't you just visualize children taking the individual crèche figures and moving them day by day closer to the manger? And as they prepare their house for Christmas, they're preparing their hearts.
Yes, I can. How wonderful. So we're talking with Dr. Mary Mance Simon, who is the author of, who even admits she was the author, not necessarily something that she thought she would be, but God has taken her and taken her gifts and has brought this blessing to so many of us. Now, you talk about the need for action for early childhood education. Let's start there. What advice would you give parents who have these young children, and maybe they're new parents, and they just need some word of advice from you today?
I would recommend that they put 3 people intentionally, very intentionally, into their support system. 1, a parent with older children than they have, not just so you can shop their garage sales, although I did that, and I will tell you, it works very, very well. But so that you can see what's happening in the future, mm-hmm. so you can get kind of an idea, you know, if your child is 5 or 6 and you find a friend who's 8 or 9, who has kids who are 8 or 9, you can say, well, how do you handle the sleepover thing? Or my daughter wants to have glitter ear eye makeup for the dress recital. How do you handle that? So you see kind of down the path. Then you need a peer parent, someone who you can call if your child forgets when the soccer uniform is due back to the coach or forgets the lunch menu and it's not online. Someone like that. But you also need someone in your support system with children younger than yours, because it is your turn to teach. And you do that not from a position of knowing everything that's right and will work, but from a position of sharing. The benefit is not just for the person to whom you're sharing, but also for you, because you have a chance, an opportunity to take a step back and look and see, oh, I did something right, or I can learn from that, or I forgot about that. I'll remember that again. So put 3 people in your support system very intentionally, so that those people who share your Christian, you know, worldview will influence you and you them.
Well, we're going to take a break right here, and but when we come back, I want to talk about discipline. We'll be right back.
Mama! Mama! Where are you? Mama!
There are over 145 million orphans in the world today, and how can we help? Well, first of all, you can pray. Take courage from the life of George Mueller, who raised $225 million in answer to prayer alone and saved thousands of orphans from lives of appalling destitution. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and I've chosen Restore a Child as the humanitarian organization I'm going to support.
To make a donation, go to www.restoreachild.org or call 877-745-7833. That's 877-745-7833.
Childhood obesity is very hard to fight in the fast food generation. Did you know that the percentage of overweight children and adults in the U.S. has nearly tripled since the early 1970s? More than 1 in 5 children between the ages of 6 and 17 are now considered overweight. Childhood obesity has been linked to diabetes, high blood pressure, depression, anxiety, and academic poor performance. Teachers have a unique opportunity to install lifelong health and fitness habits in students. Though natural education, gym activities, yoga, and even propose play at recess. Many schools, however, lack the basic equipment needed to bring these activities to life. To stop this, we need to act now by having healthier food in school and less soda and junk things like that. So let's do it.
This teen topic was written and produced by a student from Highland View Academy. For more information about Highland View Academy, go to www.hva-edu.com.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Mary Mann Simon, and we've just listened to your beautiful rendition of My March to the Manger, and now we know the history behind it. And I think that young parents that might have thought, oh, that might be silly to do, will have courage now to try some of their own family traditions.
You know, and isn't that important that we give parents the confidence?
Yes.
To trust their God-given ability to parent? That's something that is really lacking among parents today. And I, you know, I think people like me are partly at fault, because we, you know, offer all this advice instead of building up parents.
Yes.
To really follow what is in your heart. How is God leading you in this? And act on that. We really need to parent with confidence that we can do the way that we feel God is leading us.
You're right.
And go forward.
Now, I said we'd talk about discipline, because discipline is always one of those.
It is.
You know, parents are in a quandary. And I've seen this over and over again, where a child will behave, you know, perfectly at school and then go home. It's like they walk under a halo and turn into a hellion or something.
Yeah.
And parents just don't know what to do.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up, because I just I flew in from California yesterday, where I was keynoting a conference, a children's ministry conference, and one of the topics that came up was discipline. So it's not just parents who have an issue with it. I think part of the problem is our definition of discipline. We think that discipline equals punishment, but discipline comes from the word disciple, which means to teach, to lead, or to guide. And if we truly believe that definition, which it is, then we are compelled to disciple our children. We are compelled to discipline them. And you can almost take that word discipline and make it into an acronym. D, design your environment to prevent trouble. Let's see if I can think of things that will fit there. But, you know,
well,
really,
I could be instruct.
Or use I messages instead of you messages, which means instead of you made a mess, you say, when you make a mess, I'm disappointed that you've forgotten how we do this around here.
Yeah.
So something like that. S would be secure a child's attention so that you don't yell across the house and then 20 minutes later the child says, well, I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
But if you look a child in the eye, this is something extremely important today for tech-savvy kids who are spending so much time at their screens. They're having trouble reading eye messages. You know, looking a person in the eye and reading body language.
Yes.
So secure your child's attention, eye on eye, eyeball, D-I-S-C. What can we do for C? I got into this here.
Yeah, we can come back to C, but, you know, you could correct in love. You could.
Great. We'll get to E for empower at the end. But, you know, really think through, what does discipline mean to you in your home? And don't be afraid to discipline. So often I will hear a parent, and I'm on the MOPS board, so I do a lot of speaking with MOPS. A mom will tell me, but I'm afraid to set rules because my children won't like me.
Yeah.
We're not in a popularity contest here. God did not call us to be popular parents. He called us to be effective parents. And that means setting rules, being consistent about the boundaries we set.
Maybe
for
that's
our kids.
What C is.
That's right. Consistency. There it is. And we'll let our listeners fill in the rest of that acronym.
They can make their own acronym.
And that's really important because they need to think through, what is discipline to them? What does it mean? It's not some pie in the sky kind of thing that maybe happens at school when kids are following the bells and going here and there. What is happening right in the home? What is really, how are you going to teach, to lead, to guide your child? Are they going to know what behaviors to repeat? Do we really catch them being good?
Yes.
It's so easy to catch our kids doing the wrong things. But if we catch them being good, doing what's right, they'll know the behaviors to repeat again and again. Because, you see, we deal with young children initially who are people pleasers. They want to do things that will get our time and attention, our lap and our love. And when they do something right and we catch them and we say, great, good job, now you put the crayons in the box, you'll be able to find them next time. We've taught.
Right.
We have disciplined. We have taught them not only that they did a good job, but what they did was good. So they know exactly what to do.
Yes.
That goes back to that disciplining, that definition. So it would be really interesting to see what your listeners come up with.
Yes.
If they make discipline into an acronym, and how do they fill it in? And what difference does it make in their family when they follow that?
Right. In fact, follow through is so important for the parent to go, okay, this is my plan. And then when they're really stressed out, they can go, okay, I'm going to work the plan. You know, they're giving themselves permission to work this plan, not act out of anger or be a reactor, but be an actor.
And you're really talking being proactive. Mm-hmm. See, there's a whole different kind of setup, even mentally.
Yes.
So often, as discipliners, we're reactive. We see what happens and we respond, mm-hmm. often emotionally, not really rationally, yes. thinking through what we're doing. But if we can be proactive, if we can set up, for example, in designing that environment to prevent trouble, so we don't put the blocks right where somebody's going to walk in a child's bedroom, but we put them back in the corner mm-hmm. where if they build a tower, it's not going to get knocked over right away.
Yeah.
Where we put, if we want our kids to park their wheel toys in the garage, we put masking tape strips down for parking places.
Yes.
So, but see, that's how we teach.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we disciple. We are teaching our kids, and that's what discipline is.
Now, you mentioned briefly about MOPS.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Mothers of Preschoolers International is a wonderful organization that is groups of moms that get together at churches. It's not overtly evangelically minded, but Christ is a center of MOPS. So it's not something that only Christians can come to. It's something that you invite friends who have children of preschool age who just want a wonderfully supportive Christian environment. It's a great organization with meetings at churches all across the country from May to September. So call your local church and find out what kind of MOPS openings they have. Their MOPS is childcare for very young children, while mom goes and spends about an hour and a half interacting with other moms. See, that's part of that support network.
Yes. Now, what's your website again? I know we haven't mentioned it enough for our listeners.
It's marymanssimon.com. It's marymanssimon.com.
And can they link there to other MOPS organizations? Or?
Right. You can just go to mopstop.org.
Okay, mopstop.org, M-O-P-S.org.
Right. Or you can just call, you know, your local church or Google it. You'll find a lot of resources because we really want to nurture moms to be the moms that God intended them to be.
Yes, you know, as we look at addictive behaviors, we realize that in that preschool age is where we're setting the stage, and we don't even mean to. We never would want our child to become an addict because of us.
Well. And those early years really set the foundation.
Yeah.
Not just for behaviors, but also attitudes and for how kids relate to others. We know, for example, that bullying, you know, starts in those preschool years. It starts when you're driving carpool and one child says, well, you can't come over to my house today.
Yeah.
There, right there is the footprint mm-hmm. for bullying to start. So what we do in the early childhood years is absolutely critical.
Well, we've come to the conclusion of our show, but it's been so wonderful talking to you. We've been talking to Dr. Mary Mance Simon, and she read her latest book, My March to the Manger. We hope you check that out, and her website is www.marymansimon.com,
mm-hmm.
or you can go to mops.org for information on the preschool program.
Sure, just Google.
Thank you so much. I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.